from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, for the past quarter century, San Francisco's Goldman family has been honoring grassroots environmental activists from around the world. The prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to six honorees each year and includes $150,000, and we'll talk to a couple of the 2014 winners who will be recognized at a ceremony later today in San Francisco. Then at 9:30, yesterday's playoff game in Oakland between the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Clippers was overshadowed by the widespread outrage over racist comments purportedly made by Clippers owner Donald Sterling. We'll talk to sports sociologist Harry Edwards all about it, and we want to hear from you. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The Environmental Nobel Awards, those are the Goldman Environmental Prizes and what they are called. They're awarded annually in San Francisco and have reached their 25th year. Given to grassroots activist leaders from different continents across the globe, the awards include a $150,000 cash prize and a great deal of spotlight publicity. And two of this year's award winners are joining us in studio for this morning's opening half-hour segment. I want to welcome Helen Slache, who is one of the award winners this year. She's a former corporate lawyer who is fighting fracking in New York State, using essentially a legal loophole enabling individual towns to challenge fracking through zoning laws. And to date, her efforts have resulted in numerous bans, about, I think, 170, Helen, is that right?
Yeah, it's the numbers constantly in flux, moving in the right direction.
And it's moving in Texas and California and throughout the country. Well, congratulations on the award.
Well, thank you so much for having us here today.
Delighted to have you here. We also want to welcome in studio Desmond Desai, and another environmental award winner for the Goldman Prize 2014. He's a South African activist who was inspired by the late Nelson Mandela and worked to shut down one of the largest toxic dumping sites in an area of post-apartheid South Durban, which is known as Cancer Valley by residents for the high rates of leukemia. And welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you, and thank you for hosting us here today.
And not only high rates of leukemia, but we ought to say high rates of asthma. Well, we'll get into this momentarily. But Helen Slache, let me begin with you. And this all started essentially for you moving to Ithaca in 2007, and you discovered there were a lot of natural gas leases across the state.
So, yes, fracking really took off in shale in the Northeast in 2005. And from 2005 through 2007 and a bit into 2008, there was a lot of gas leasing, which people really didn't understand what they were giving away. They thought it was like a lease. You would think a lease was a lease, but it's really a serious transfer of mineral rights and the opportunity to develop your property and to have the dominant rights on the surface.
And forgive me, but this is the Finger Lakes region, which is the largest known underground shale region in the country. Yeah.
So, yes, it would appear to be. The Finger Lakes and upstate New York is just a beautiful, verdant area with lakes and gorges and forests and farmlands, and several hours away from New York City. People hear New York and they think you live in the city, but we don't live anywhere near the city.
And essentially, we're talking about local land use decisions. I mean, this is local zoning and land use laws that you essentially work to your advantage in terms of stopping fracking from taking place, limiting – it's sort of like limiting light and noise. I mean, the municipality decides, yeah?
Right. So the whole thesis is, and I think it runs through all of the work of the Goldman Prize winners, is that people should have a say about what happens in their communities, and that's important, that people – should be able to say no, that there are these terrible health and environmental impacts from our activities, corporate activities, and that those costs should be borne by the corporations and the people shouldn't be left holding the bag with sickness and asthma caused by ground-level ozone and diesel particulates from generators and the like and refineries. It's really sort of symptomatic of a global problem.
And what's your objection to the leases specifically then?
Well, the leases many were obtained without people really understanding what the leases were about. And they were sold to people as you'll never know we're here. We'll be in and out. It's the patriotic thing to do. And, help us with energy security. Then they flipped the leases you know, internationally, it's like the same people that sold us the housing bubble are basically creating this fracking bubble with carbon assets. And the whole, I mean, as it's just a complete package of degradation. And while people have the right to use their own property as they feel free to, with property comes an obligation. The only reason you have a property right is because someone else has an obligation to respect that, and vice versa. And you don't have the right to use your property to hurt other people.
And we should mention that fracking is the drilling through rock, a pressurized mix of water and chemicals to release natural gas. The gas industry give you a hard time about this? I mean, put pressure on you? What kind of reaction did you get, or blowback?
The word that one person, reporter I was talking to recently used was that they despise us. My husband and I do this work together. And they're very arrogant, and they're accustomed to getting their way, and they don't believe that the rules should apply to them. They're accustomed to basically being able to do whatever they want without regard for how people feel about it. And it really, they still don't really understand why people feel like they should have a right to say no to them. That's just beyond their ken.
I understand that from your perspective and those who have rallied behind you, and this has been a grassroots movement, this is all about agency for people and people's deciding as opposed to the oil and gas industry deciding. There has been some pushback, though. There's an industry-funded website called Energy in Depth, and they say that you've presented yourself as being pro bono and you're not pro bono. They talk about you're getting $50,000 from the Park Foundation and other funding. Yeah,
they go wild with that. Pro bono, and lots of lawyers do pro bono. What that refers to is we don't charge our clients. And we went into this. We've never charged a client. We provide all of our work as lawyers. My husband and I are both lawyers and have worked for free for hundreds of communities across the state. And while we have set up a nonprofit and ultimately several years into this did receive some grants from foundations and a lot of individual supporters, that doesn't make the fact that we provided this work without charge to these towns any less remarkable and helpful to those towns. It's very difficult for municipalities. It's much like here in California, really tight budgetary pressures, and to hire high-quality lawyers to draft laws that will stand up to industry challenges would cost tens of thousands of dollars for each town.
Well, you found a good loophole in the zoning laws. I just wonder, though, what you say, and we'll hear from Mr. DeSaw's story in just a moment, to the argument, which I'm sure you've heard, that carbon dioxide emissions now are at their lowest level in 20 years, and some say this is because of the shift from coal to natural gas, in part due to fracking, and that fracking results in lower natural gas and oil prices and has led to a drop in the use of coal. So that's better for the environment.
So, yes, I mean, that's certainly an argument that people make, and it's wrong. The coal that is not burned in this country because of natural gas is shipped to China. There is no less coal being extracted from the United States than there ever was. And the level of natural gas emissions are substantially underestimated. They have just done some flyover studies where, compared to the industry-funded studies, the natural gas methane emissions were 1,000 times greater than had previously been reported, up to 1,000 times greater. So it is impossible to extract natural gas from the ground without having tremendous methane emissions. And methane in the short term is much more powerful than CO2.
We also don't know what's happening in the groundwater, do we?
So, well, that's a whole nother
problem. I mean, we've had big debates about fracking, and I don't want to necessarily open
right.
that Pandora's box, but
you,
know, you do
Pandora's
hear these
box.
Arguments, of course. Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, there's lots of arguments, and most of them, if you were to step back and to think about what was really important, here we are in a time of climate chaos, of growing income inequality, and all of these social problems. And if you were to think, what do we want our society to look like? Do we want to have a healthy community with open space and agriculture and, you know, a sustainable, resilient environment? Or do we want to tear everything up and burn things and leave a wasteland? And that's what fracking does. It leaves a wasteland. And why anyone would want to do that is, you know, really very difficult for me to comprehend.
Helen Slatche, again, is a 2014 Goldman Environmental Prize recipient for North America and a former corporate lawyer fighting fracking in New York State. And now, as I said, this has spread in California, Texas, and Colorado, and using a legal loophole, which essentially enables individual towns to challenge fracking through zoning laws. And to date, those efforts have resulted, as we said, in numerous bans on fracking. Desmond DeSaz is here with us. He's 2014 Goldman Environmental Prize recipient for the continent of Africa. He's a South African activist who worked to shut down one of the largest toxic dumping sites in South Africa, in South Durban, in the area of post-apartheid South Africa, called Cancer Alley by the residents who have these pretty extraordinary rates of leukemia. What are we talking about, Desmond DeSaz?
We're talking about leukemia rates of 24 times the norm, the national norm in South Africa. You're talking about leukemia rates high, very prevalent in the youth in South Africa. That's destroying their education, destroying their lives, so they don't even go beyond the primary school level.
And this was in a poor black neighborhood talking about, this toxic waste dump that you shut down.
Toxic waste dump sites predominantly in South Africa are in poor black neighborhoods. And this is the fourth toxic dump site in the South Durban community environment, South Durban community.
Over half the population has asthma too now. These things are often difficult to prove in any solid empirical way epidemiologically, but the numbers, I suppose, speak for themselves. And I'm wondering about your own involvement in this. I mean, you worked in a chemical factory, didn't you?
I did. I worked for the State Oil Corporation, Sasol, which had a chemical company in South Durban.
That's the one that had a massive chemical explosion?
No. The one that had the massive chemical explosion was the IVS, in the storage facility, a British company that stored a huge amount of chemicals in the Durban harbor.
And so you became involved in this. Why?
I became involved in the environmental justice movement because from its initial stages was that I found in my own family that my brother died of cancer, and one of my daughters had asthma, and today one of my grandchildren, because I've got 9 grandchildren, so one of them has got asthma. But more importantly was that the constant wailing of sirens through the local community at all parts of the day and night reminded me of the government ambulances coming up to and bringing in the oxygen gas cylinders as well as the nebulizers to provide oxygen through to the children of South Durban who were ill on account of the respiratory illnesses that they received, that they got from living alongside toxic landfill sites, but also chemical and petrochemical industries in South Durban.
So you got this community galvanized, in effect, and did a lot of lobbying and essentially spread the word and got people organized.
Well, since 1994, an incident that triggered this whole thing was a chemical company, which was formerly owned by ExxonMobil, suddenly just upped and left the neighborhood alongside a children's park where kids play in the area. And they went into the factory with the gates all open and got hold of a chemical called Lindane. And they had convulsions, and they ended up being rushed to hospital on account of that. And that galvanized me into understanding that, the irresponsibility of major corporations in the way they act and the way they produce and where they live alongside poor black neighborhoods in South Durban.
The government was on your side on this pretty much?
Well, in the initial stages in the early 90s, the government of Nelson Mandela, and Mandela, we had met him in 1995 in three meetings with him. The biggest gathering of the captains of industry, 600 captains of industry in the city hall in Durban, the new legislation coming out of that discussion with Mandela resulted in the new Air Quality Act in South Africa, signed in 2004. But more importantly, a progressive right within the Bill of Rights and within the Constitution of South Africa, which said that if there was a problem, you have a right to a clean and healthy environment, and if there's a problem, it must be immediately fixed.
This is a 10-year campaign, though, right?
This was a 10-year campaign resulting in communities being mobilized, but also taking their own air samples. So we used the Bucket Brigade that came out of California through GCM, the Global Community Monitoring in California, working with them, working with Denny Lawson, taking air samples.
And it's one of our locals, Denny Larson.
One of your locals. And we used the data. use the data in South Durban to provide to government and to ensure that we pressurize the government and use it as a lobby tool. And as a result of that, we got the 14 most sophisticated air quality monitoring stations in South Durban developed and paid for by government.
You want to say something about the Richmond refinery, since you've worked with Danny Larson?
Yes. Well, initially in 1998, after Mandela had visited South Durban, as a result of that discussion and agreement with the state president and many cabinet ministers, we had an American lawyer come out here, Graham Boyd, who worked with the Richmond community on a good neighborly agreement. And as a result of that, we got Graham to come out to South Durban, and a good neighborly agreement was developed with the public interest lawyers in Durban. And it forced ExxonMobil, the ExxonMobil refinery in Durban, to reduce its sulfur dioxide. The Richmond community, I was back here in 2011, and it's the same sort of problems way back that we experienced in South Durban, where multinational chemical corporations such as Chevron dump tons of toxic chemicals onto their unsuspecting neighborhoods and use their lungs as purifiers. And the same thing back in Durban, you know, they dumped tons of toxic chemicals on their suspecting neighbors who were asleep at night. And as a result of that, the cancer risk is 25 in 100,000, and yet the norm is 1 in 100,000. And so the Richmond discussion and my visit to Richmond in 2011 was very crucial. One was to understand the dynamics, and one was to understand what is going on and how the community is impacted upon by Chevron.
Sounds like a good agreement here was a model for yours.
It was a great model for us way back in South Durban. So we have commonality, and we've shared experiences and shared understanding of the petrochemical refineries.
This gives new meaning to the idea of sister-brother cities in South Durban and Richmond. I want to take this moment to remind listeners that we're talking to two of the recipients of what is known as the Green Nobel, which is the Goldman Environmental Prize, representing different continents, Desmond Desaa, from South Africa, who represents the whole continent of Africa. They give one award over the whole continent, and Helen Slache representing North America. And you've heard their stories, and you may want to comment. In fact, you may have questions for them, and indeed, you are welcome to join the program now. We do invite you to participate and let us know what your thoughts are, and feel free to do that now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us now at that number. This is a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to say or ask, I would suggest that you call now or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. But feel free to participate. We're going to be talking about the whole mess with Donald Sterling after the 9:30 break. But in the meantime, we do welcome your calls and emails. And here's a listener who says, can Helen explain why landowners who sign these leases do not understand what they are signing? They have a strong interest in understanding them, and they likely want the money to accept some trade-offs for the money. So what evidence do you have that they really are too dumb to understand what they're signing?
Well, in Ithaca, there were a number of people, Cornell professors, and very intelligent people. They formed a group called FLEAST, F and then leased, and because they had been lied to, the risks were not explained to them, the technology was not explained to them, the true nature of what they were giving away was not explained to them. And
the contracts didn't make any of this explicit?
The oil and gas contracts are filled with terms of art that look like they might have one meaning in the dictionary, but in the oil and gas world have an entirely different meaning or a very precise meaning. And fundamentally what the contract says is it doesn't matter anything that we told you orally, you know, everything is in this written document. And the written document is written in very small print, very long, very difficult to comprehend, and people relied on what they were told, on what these landmen told them. And so they're actually the attorney general in New York stepped in, and because the leasing companies have been improperly extending these leases and engaging in very unsavory business practices.
It's up Governor Cuomo's desk now, my understanding, is as far as the moratorium, isn't it, on fracking?
So Governor Cuomo is responsible for the lack of permitting in New York right now. through the Department of Environmental Conservation that is conducting an environmental review. And so that's one side of the equation. And then there's also the Attorney General in the state of New York who has been investigating the practices of these companies with their leases.
Well, you made the analogy before to what went on with the mortgages, and that seems like a pretty good analogy. We've got a caller, actually, who's on point here, and that's Sherilyn. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I own 168 acres of mineral rights outside of Minot, North Dakota, and the companies are marching toward my area to pull leases. And I'm struggling with this because I think of myself as somebody who really cares about my environment, and I'm a doctor, and I don't want to contribute to a problem. But what do I do with something I own? How do I turn this into an opportunity to make it about the environment or something else?
So I'm not admitted in as a lawyer in North Dakota, so I don't know what the rules are. In some states, if you don't lease, they cannot frack your land. In other states, even if you don't lease, you can be what's called compulsory integrated or pooled with other people. We believe that if you are compulsorily integrated, forced effectively to lease and only paid for the gas that is extracted and not through an eminent domain procedure, that it's a trespass to bore under your property and to leave all of these chemicals and proppants and other things behind, that that's a physical trespass on your land. So we're hoping to help people fight this forced leasing and forced drilling. But not drilling, not signing a lease is your number one way to not get involved.
Well, good luck to you, Sherilyn. And we're going to go to more calls here in just a moment. We only have a few minutes left. But I also wanted to get Desmond Desai on record here talking about you're fighting now a $10 billion Durban Post expansion, which would displace thousands of South Port expansion, which would displace, as I understand it, thousands of citizens of South Durban, many who were brought in for cheap labor under the apartheid regime, yes?
That's true. Yeah, many of us, including myself, is a product of forced removals. We lost clean running air. We lost clean running water. We lost vegetable gardens. We lost clean air to be forced into South Durban. And we've been there for over 40 years, and we've had to work the land. We've had to build up our homes, we had to build up our communities and provide the stable society that we presently enjoy. And with the port expansion, which is a land grab, no one has come to us to indicate the benefits, whether it's going to improve our homes or in our lives in South Durban. Instead, what we see is that it's going to decay the area, it's going to be resulting in the forced removals of thousands of people of South Durban, where to government hasn't placed that on record. But our fear is that we're going to lose stable communities. And in a democratic South Africa, do we not have a right to have stable homes? Where do we fall in the picture of a democratic South Africa in result to our community, where we have high levels of good education, we have good hospitals in the area, and we have good religious institutions and small businesses? That's not been factored in. And so the port expansion, where our government is trying to privatize the whole development and go out and get huge loans, whether it's from the World Bank or other institutions, of $10 billion, this will have a severe impact on us. And so my visit here as well is to urge the American people who previously were very resolute in their support against the apartheid regime to support the people in South Durban against this massive port, which we call economic apartheid.
Well, I'm glad that we got that on the record here. I'm sorry that we've run out of time. We had a lot of calls and we just didn't get to them. But I thank you both for being here. And again, congratulations on winning these awards. I'll see you tonight at the ceremony. And actually, you can live stream the Goldman Prize ceremony, which begins at 5:30 tonight, by going to youtube.com/Goldman Prize. The ceremony will be hosted by Soledad O'Brien. I'll be back with you to talk about Donald Sterling and his rather outrageous remarks that were caught on audio. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.